ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Today, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 9, text number 20. Nava etad Vishnu Datta Mahad Adbhutang Yarasang Brahma Swashirash Chedana Apatitepi. Vimukta dehad yatma bhava sudrida hridaya granthinam sarva sattva suhridat manam nirvairanam sakshad bhagavatan nimishari varayudhena pramattena tais tair bhavai parirakshamananam tat paramulam akutaschit bhayam upasritanam Bhagavata Parahamsanam. Word for word meanings. Please say responsively. Na, not. Va, or. Etat, this. Vishnu Datta. O Maharaj Parikshit, who was protected by Lord Vishnu. Mahat, a great, adbhutam, wonder, yat, which, asambhramam, lack of perplexity, swashirakchedane, when the chopping off of the head, Apatite was about to happen. Api, although. No, excuse me, even though. Vimukta, completely liberated from. Deha adi atma bhava, the false bodily concept of life. Sudrida, very strong and tight. Hridaya grantinam, of those whose knots within the heart. Sarva sattva surhit atmanam, of persons who, in their hearts, always wish well to all living entities. Nirvairanam, who do not find anyone as their enemy. Sakshat, directly. Bhagavatam, by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Animisha, invincible time. Arivara, and the best of weapons. The Sudarshan Chakra. Ayudhena, by him who possesses the weapons. Apramattena, not agitated at any time. Tai Tai, by those respective. Bhavai, moods of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Parirakshamananam, of persons who are protected. Tatparamulam. At the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Akutaschit. From nowhere. Bhayam. Fear. Upasritanam. Of those who have taken complete shelter. Bhagavata. Of devotees of the Lord. Paramahansanam. Of the most liberated persons. Translation. Shukadev Goswami then said to Maharaj Parikshit, O Vishnu Datta, those who already know that the soul is separate from the body, who are liberated from the invincible knot in the heart, who are always engaged in welfare activities for all living entities, and who never contemplate harming anyone, are always protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who carries his disc, the Sudarshan Chakra, and acts as supreme time to kill the demons and protect his devotees. The devotees always take shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord. Therefore, at all times, even if threatened by decapitation, they remain unagitated. For them, this is not at all wonderful. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. These are some of the great qualities of a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. First, a devotee is firmly convinced of his spiritual identity. He never identifies with the body. He is firmly convinced that the spirit soul is different from the body. Consequently, he fears nothing. Even though his life may be threatened, he is not at all afraid. He does not even treat an enemy like an enemy. Such are the qualifications of devotees. Devotees are always fully dependent on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the Lord is always eager to give them all protection in all circumstances. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 5th canto, 9th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled The Supreme Character of Jarabhart. Om Gyana Timirandasya Gyanan Janashalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Karamahyam Dharati Swapatantikam Nama Om Vishnu Paraya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Chinamane Namaste Sarasati Deva Gauravani Pacharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschati Deshatarane. So we're very fortunate today to have the opportunity to discuss Srimad Bhagavatam and the Association of Pure Devotees of the Lord. Here, the story of Jarabhart being delivered from the hands of the dacoits is being concluded. And Shukadev Goswami He's basically asking a rhetorical question. He's asking, is it surprising? Is this a very surprising thing? He's asking. Here is someone who's bound up with ropes. He'd just been bathed and readied for sacrifice before
goddess Kali. He's the chopper is there. He knows, it's not that he's unconscious. He knows what's going on. He's completely undisturbed. No fear, no disturbance, no attempt to protect himself. Nothing. He said, basically he's saying to Maharaj Parikshit, don't you think this is something very wonderful that this person is there about to have his head chopped off and he's not at all disturbed? The point he's making is no, it's not at all surprising. This is Shukadeva Goswami's point. No, this is not at all surprising because Jhar Bharat was completely fixed up in meditation on the supreme, on the supreme Lord, Lord Vishnu. But he's not oblivious. It's not that he's, you know, in some sort of stupor that he doesn't know what's going on. He's not oblivious. He was posted in the field by his elder brothers, half-brothers, for guarding and making sure that no one comes and steals the crops or no animals come, or whatever. And he was doing his job as assigned by his half-brothers to guard the fields at night. And when the dacoits came, he certainly understood that dacoits are coming, but he was not disturbed. He was not at all concerned. So they're coming to, and then they start to talk about how he would be a suitable candidate for the sacrifice. He was not disturbed. They bound him up with ropes. He didn't protest. And they brought him before the deity. Didn't protest. Says, actually, this is not very wonderful because, as Srila Prabhupada said, some higher taste was there. That he was understanding that he's not that body. Fully understanding. No trace of attachment to his body. Says, this is not me. This is not mine. My business is Krishna's business to do what he wants with his body. It's my business to think of him. And he was fully fixed up in this understanding. When his father was instructing him on how to be a Pakka Vaidic Brahman, his father was instructing him. He was hearing, but he was not able to follow the instructions because he was remembering his past birth. He was hearing his father's instructions, but at the same time he was remembering that in his previous birth, due to some mistake, he was in the body of a deer. He remembered that deer body. He remembered how embarrassing it was to be, after being King Bharat, the son of Maharaj Vrishabhdev and king of the whole world, to then take the body of a deer. He was blessed with this remembrance of his past birth. So thinking of this and not wanting to make the same mistake again, he was simply taking all precautions about becoming absorbed so that he did not become at all, even for one nimisha. One nimisha is a blinking of the eye. That much time that it takes to blink the eye, that is a nimisha. So not even for that much time did he want to think anything about the material world, about his body, nothing. He was simply absorbed in thinking of the Supreme Lord. And he wouldn't be, even all this going on around him, being captured, dragged with ropes, and prepared for the sacrifice, and the chopper in front of him, nothing disturbed him from his meditation. This was not some show. Just like Srila Prabhupada gives an example, which I'll expand upon. Srila Prabhupada gives the example that if someone is pretending to be asleep, very difficult to wake him up. If someone's actually asleep, you can easily wake him up. Right? But to take the example a step further, if someone's pretending to be asleep, and then he understands through hearing that he's about to be killed, certainly he'll wake up. Because it's a show. So this is not some show on the part of Judd Bharat. He's actually absorbed in the Supreme Lord. So here, in this verse, there's some descriptions of the qualities of someone who is protected by, of a devotee who is protected by the Supreme Lord. Two qualities are given for that. And also two qualities of the Supreme Lord are described in this verse. So these two words that are used to describe the Supreme Lord. One is animisha. Just like nimisha means that time that you blink an eye. So animisha means that one is not inattentive. Someone is animisha if he is constantly vigilant, constantly awake and conscious and aware. So this is used to describe the Supreme Lord, because the Supreme Lord is always conscious of the needs of his devotees. He never fails, even for the blinking of an eye, to be aware of the needs and concerns of his devotees. And the other word that's in this verse that's used to describe the Supreme Lord is apramatta. Pramatta, we know this word pramatta, means careless. So apramatta means not careless. So not only is he always aware of the needs and concerns of his devotee, but he's also apramatta, which means that he's not careless in reciprocating with those needs and satisfying those needs. He's not at all careless or inattentive also can be just be definition there. So, was Bharat Maharaj thinking? I'm asking a question. Was Bharat Maharaj thinking, oh, the Supreme Lord is animisha, he's apramatta, so I don't have to protect my body. The Supreme Lord will protect me because he's animisha apramatta. Was this what Judd Bharat was thinking? No. He was just thinking of his Supreme Lord. He wasn't thinking about how the Supreme Lord was going to protect his body. He was simply, he was completely detached from his body. He didn't even care if the Supreme Lord protected it or not. Completely detached. But Shukadeva Goswami wanted Maharaj Parikshit to understand that the Supreme Lord is animisha apramatta. He wanted Parikshit Maharaj to hear that the Supreme Lord is always takes care of his devotees. And to further make that point, he refers to Parikshit Maharaj by Vishnu Datta. There in the beginning, this is his address to Parikshit Maharaj, Vishnu Datta. So we all know the story of how Parikshit Maharaj became known as Vishnu Datta. Parikshit Maharaj was the only remaining descendant of the Pandavas in the womb of his mother Uttara. The five sons of the Pandavas were heinously murdered in their sleep. So the only remaining heir to the throne of the Pandavas was Parikshit. And he was there in the womb of Uttara, his mother. And the Brahmastra weapon was sent to kill him. And so Parikshit Maharaj, he remembers being in the womb, and he sees this glaring effulgence coming to kill him, this Brahmastra weapon. And then he sees Lord Vishnu coming to protect him, to save him from that burning Brahmastra. So Shukadev was reminding him, just like you were protected in the womb of your mother, the Lord Supreme Lord always protects his devotees. There's no concern for the body. Bharat Maharaj was thinking not that, oh, let my body be saved by the Supreme Lord, therefore let me, like, you know, some other devotees, you know, like the story of Draupadi, she stops resisting and just surrenders to Krishna, please protect me. He's not thinking like that. He's thinking, oh, these dacoits, they want to cut off my head and offer my blood to the goddess Kali. Okay, it's not my body. Thinking like that. It's not me. So this is the topmost standard of detachment from the body. So Shukadev Goswami is talking to Maharaj Parikshit. He says, the Supreme Lord is always attentive to his devotees. And then there's another very important phrase is used in this verse. It says, Tais Tair Bhavai. Tai Tai means, however, in different ways. And Bhava means mood. So the Supreme Lord, he's not this, I don't know if you know this English word, unidimensional. He's not just a person with only one facet to his personality. Sometimes we may know someone who's, they always act the same way in every circumstance. They always reciprocate with everyone in the same way. We say they're unidimensional person. Supreme Lord's not like that. He's always reciprocating with his devotees, Tais Tair Bhavai, according to different moods as required. All of them, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. All men follow my paths in all respects. Bhagavad Gita. So, Krishna reciprocates. Not just according to the degree of surrender, but also according to the variety of surrender. If someone surrenders to him in the mood of awe and reverence, shantaras, then he reciprocates accordingly. Someone surrenders to him in the mood of dasya, then he reciprocates accordingly. He takes the mood of master and engages the servant. Someone surrenders to him in the mood of sakya, then he behaves like a friend and has a friendly relationship. Someone surrenders to him in vatsalya, then he takes the form of a child and acts as if he's completely dependent on the parent or on the elder. Someone surrenders to him in conjugal ras, madhurya, then he reciprocates in that mood as well. So according to the mood of the devotee, the Supreme Lord reciprocates. So we should always remember this, that Krishna is always ready to reciprocate to us appropriately. Therefore, if we ever see some lacking, that we're not experiencing a proper relationship with the Supreme Lord, then where is the fault? The fault's not with the Supreme Lord. The fault's with us. It's our problem. Krishna's completely ready to reciprocate with us, but we're not ready to reciprocate with him. So that's the problem. Very nice verse in this connection from 11th chapter of the first canto. This is the chapter entitled Lord Krishna's Entrance into Dwaraka. After the Battle of Kurukshetra, and after all the events installing the Pandavas on the throne, etc., etc., took place. Finally, after all these events were complete, then Lord Krishna returned to Dwaraka. And one very, very nice verse is there, text 21. Bhagavans tatra bandhunam poranam anuvartanam yata vidyupasangamya sarvesham manam adade. Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead, approached each resident of Dwaraka and offered due honor and respect to each and every one of the friends, relatives, citizens, and all others who came to receive and welcome him. So all the citizens of Dwaraka, they came out onto the streets, up to the top of the buildings, outside the gate, to welcome Krishna. And Krishna reciprocated perfectly with each one. Just according to the proper, their position, and his relationship with them. He had loving exchanges with each member. Srila Prabhupada gives a very nice purport. The Supreme Lord Personality of Godhead is neither impersonal nor an inert object unable to reciprocate the feelings of his devotees. Here the word yatavidhi, or, and Srila Prabhupada uses an old English, obsolete English word here, quote, just as it behooves. Now maybe we're not familiar with this word behooves, but just according to the what is appropriate. Here the word yatavidhi, or just as it behooves, is significant. He reciprocates just as it behooves with his different types of admirers and devotees. Of course, the pure devotees are of one type only, because they have no other object for service but the Lord. And therefore the Lord also reciprocates with such pure devotees just as it behooves. Namely, he is always attentive to all matters of his pure devotees. There are others who designate him as impersonal. And so the Lord also does not take any personal interest. So someone thinks the Supreme Lord is impersonal, so he doesn't take any personal interest in them. He satisfies everyone in terms of one's development of spiritual consciousness. And a sample of such reciprocation is exhibited here with his different welcomers. Very nice explanation by Srila Prabhupada. But many places this is going on. Parikshit, of course, is a very good example. He heard Srimad Bhagavatam continually, 7 days, 7 nights, without eating, sleeping, being inattentive for even one nimisha. So he's the very, very prominent example. And he got the full mercy of Krishna by his... And Krishna was fully attentive to his needs. Another from the first canto, in the descriptions of the incarnations of the Supreme Lord, the verses summarized, Ete changsa kalapungsa krishnastu bhagavan swayam indrari vyakulam loke mridayanti yuge yuge. So the Supreme Lord, He also reciprocates with the demigods according to the need. If there are some enemies of Indra prominent in the world, He comes. He sends His Kala. He comes Himself, or He sends His expansion to reciprocate with His devotees, the demigods. This is a very nice example also. Also, third canto, instructions of Lord Kapila. Nachasya kaschit dayato na dvesho na cha bandhava avishat yapramatto so pramattam janam antakrit. It says that Krishna's not, He doesn't have particular doya for anyone. He's not particularly merciful to anyone. He doesn't have some prejudice against one particular kind of living entity as opposed to another kind of living entity. Nachasya kaschit dayata. And also, na dvesho na cha bandhava. He doesn't distinguish between dvesha, someone who is envious of Him, or someone who's His friend, bandhava. He doesn't distinguish. Avishat apramatto so pramattam janam antakrit. But if someone approaches Him, favorably, then He reciprocates with that accordingly. And if someone doesn't care for Him, antakrit, He destroys them. This does not mean that Krishna's partial, or He's merciful to some and not merciful to others. He's fully merciful to everyone. And this is how He displays His mercy. By reciprocating with those who approach Him and by destroying those who neglect Him. This is how he displays His mercy. But He sees all living entities as His part and parcel. So how does one... So what is the qualification for one to deserve, or for one to be able to enter into this loving relationship with Krishna? So this verse gives two qualifications. And Srila Prabhupada expands in the translation each of these qualifications into two again. So making four. So the translation says, O Vishnu Datta, those who already know that the soul is separate from the body, who are liberated from the invincible knot in the heart, who are always engaged in welfare activities for all living entities, and who never contemplate harming anyone. So these two qualifications are there. One is that one must be completely convinced that the soul is separate from the body. Or, looking at it another way, Srila Prabhupada also gives another way of looking at it. Or they're liberated from the invincible knot in the heart. This material attachment is like a hard knot in the heart. So someone who's completely detached from the body. They've completely cut that knot in the heart. They're having one of these two qualifications. And the other, that they're always engaged in welfare activities for all living entities, and they never contemplate harming anyone. So this is Jiva Dvaya, two aspects of Jiva Dvaya. Always engaged in welfare activities, trying to help uplift everyone without discrimination. Just like Krishna doesn't discriminate, we should also not discriminate. And we should be prepared. We should not want to hurt anyone. So these two qualifications, the knot in the heart is cut, and one has Jiva Dvaya, mercy to everyone. With these two qualifications, one is deserving of Krishna's protection and association. So this is the lesson of Shukadev Goswami in this verse. Even we should be prepared, no matter what the circumstances, we should always be thinking of the Supreme Lord, not caring for our own bodily comfort. In the beginning, the tests may be easy. How much am I going to think of Krishna, and how much am I going to think of sense gratification? So maybe the tests are easy in the beginning. But when the time of death comes, or the threat of death comes, then the test will be very difficult. So we have to practice. We have to take every opportunity to practice full dependence upon the Supreme Lord. Thank you very much for your kind attention. Questions and comments? Yes, Prabhuji. Microphone here.
Thank you very much for your very insightful class. My question is, here the activities of Jad Bharat, they are like surely on very high spiritual platform. Like he is not, he's so detached from his body that he's not caring for his death also. At our level we feel that, you know, we are still attached and we need to perfect our Krishna consciousness, and that's why we are fearful of death also, that we should not die untimely so that our future will be very, and those who are elevated but still they may not consider themselves elevated and still humbly be fearful of death.
Still what?
Still they may be fearful of death because they are humble, that, you know, we are not elevated. So how like in our own personal life, how we should it's like he is very boldly accepting that, you know, I am on that level and I should act like that, completely unaware of death. Like he doesn't matter if death comes now or later, or how. But for a devotee, how it's like, even if he is highly elevated, still we have seen like devotees, they feel themselves that no, it's not a good time to, I may save myself and do more Krishna consciousness to, you know, face death. So how it is like? At what time we can think like Bharat Maharaj? Because
we have to carry out the order of the spiritual master. If the order of the spiritual master involves some risk, that's a test for us. It's not that we should make a decision today whether I'm going to be able to do a particular kind of service. Should I be asked? No. We should just be simple. If we're asked to do some service, then we should assume that the ability to do that service is coming along with the order. It's not that we have to make some conscious. I'm not on that level. Therefore, I can't do that service. Not that we have a choice, right? Do we have a choice? If a spiritual master tells us to do a particular service, we should do that service, regardless of the risk involved. Otherwise, and if he wasn't prepared to help us, then he wouldn't give us that service to begin with. I don't know, maybe it's not a direct answer to your question, but what do you think? Does it satisfy?
one part I understood, but like my still half the question remains is, when devotee feels like Jad Bharat, like he's really on that level where he understands that nothing can budge me from my Krishna consciousness. But generally at our stage, how we should think, like when some difficulties are there, or there is same.
How we should think under what circumstance?
Like same, if this situation appears to me.
If what?
This situation as Jad Bharat approaching death appears to me, then I will be very fearful surely, because I have not perfected. And we have seen some devotees, although they have perfected their lives.
This verse is not recommending that if you're someone is threatening to kill you, that you should not do anything to protect yourself. That's not the point of this verse. Elsewhere in the Shastra it says that an aggressor, if someone approaches you in an aggressive mood to kill you, then you can kill that person. That's also there in Shastra. So according to your level, you have to act accordingly. If you're not on a level of Jada Bharat, then you have to, someone approaches you to kill you, you should defend yourself. Of course. But the point is being made here that Jada Bharat, he wasn't even thinking. Defending himself wasn't even an option that he was thinking about, because he was concerned is, I don't want to become attached to this body. I don't want to do anything related to this body. I don't want to do anything because I remember what my previous life was like. We don't have that remembrance. If we did, maybe we would have that same attitude. But Krishna hasn't given us that remembrance. Some other question? Yes, Mukesh ji.
The whole episode of Bharat Maharaj is for demonstration purpose, we can say, right?
What?
Demonstration purpose. Demonstration.
I'm not hearing.
Bharat Maharaj episode is for demonstration purpose. Otherwise, nobody falls from that high and takes two births to finally liberate it.
Can someone help me?
just making a comment.
He wants it back.
So are there any cases where actual fall down has taken place and how God helped that person to elevate thereafter?
I'm not able to understand your...
The fall down of Bharat Maharaj is only for demonstration purpose. Just to show. So are there any cases in the history where actually some devotee fell down and how God elevated him thereafter?
Yeah, I understand the question. Does it say that in the Shastra somewhere that it's demonstration purpose only? Is that what it said? I don't remember reading that.
That is what some acharyas interpret, that nobody can fall down from bhava stage. But it is just to show the strictness.
Bharat Maharaj went to the forest, but he hadn't given up material attachment. I mean, by going to the forest and giving up the kingdom, being the son of Maharaj Rishabhdev, all that, he went to the forest to become detached, but he was not successful. Therefore, he took the body of a deer. As far as I know, it was not just some lila. Of course, the whole thing is lila, but he actually became attached to the deer, and therefore he had to take a deer body. But he got, because of his past pious activity, he was given the benediction in the body of Jarbhara to remember his past life, and therefore to be able to perfect himself, perfect, you know, that life as Jarbhara.
So in case of Jagai Madhai, in one stroke they were saved. Jagai and Madhai.
Jagai and Madhai.
They were saved in one stroke by God.
Yeah.
And in case of Bharat Maharaj, even for one small attachment to deer, it took two births. So
do you know who Jagai Madhai were? Do you know who they are?
No.
Jay and Vijay. Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha. Ravan Kumbhakarna. Dandavakra and Shishupal. They were devotees. So that was Leela. They were devotees they took this birth in order to glorify Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya. That was Leela.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna. I want to ask two things, Prabhu. Firstly, it is mentioned, you said that the qualification for taking up Krishna consciousness is that one should not do any harm to any jivas. And then one has to do welfare activities. So welfare activity means only distributing Krishna consciousness, am I correct? Or material welfare activities?
There are always... Jiva Doya means always interested in the benefit of other jivas. So that can mean different things in different circumstances. We also give prasadam to those who are hungry. That is, someone can say that's a material welfare activity, but we also understand that if someone has someone's belly is empty, then they're not going to be able. They're only going to be thinking about food. But if their belly is full, then they can. Maybe there's a chance they can think about Krishna. So in that sense. That may be a welfare activity, but the point is they don't
they don't harm anyone. They're always thinking about the welfare of others, whatever that means. That may differ according to circumstances. But they're always thinking of the welfare of others.
But if we do welfare, material welfare to others, that means we are again entangled in bondage, you know. Distributing prasadam is okay.
See from Krishna's viewpoint. Why did Krishna create the jiva in the first place? If he just to make him suffer? Huh?
To give opportunity to, enjoy in material world.
Huh. So it's also Krishna's plan that they enjoy in the material world. So that can also be jiva doya, to help someone to enjoy in the material world. But if there's a better way, better kind of jiva doya, then that's preferred. In this Kali Yuga, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the jiva doya that he has instructed us to do is to spread the Krishna consciousness movement. In other yugas, other ages, other circumstances, that may take other forms.
Okay, Hare Krishna. Secondly, Prabhu, when Jadabharata's, when dacoits wanted to chop off the head of Jadabharata, he was least bothered about his body.
When
dacoits wanted to chop off the head of Jadabharata, he was least bothered about his body, correct?
He was what?
He was not at all bothered about his body.
Bothered, right.
So, that means when he was Bharat Maharaja, his body was material, and when he was a deer, his body was material. And when he took birth as Jadabharata, right from the beginning his body was spiritual?
It doesn't say that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead that has a spiritual Satchidananda Vigraha. No, it doesn't say that he has Satchidananda Vigraha. That's only Krishna appears in this material world with Satchidananda Vigraha. Sometimes we talk about spiritual bodies, but Srila Prabhupada may say, well, actually, this is spiritual because it's used in Krishna's service, the microphone. Srila Prabhupada would say like that. That's nice to think of that, like that way, but it's still a microphone with metal and all that. Just similarly, our body, we may use it in Krishna's service, so maybe, we may become purified and healthy and all those kinds of things, but it's still, bone, marrow, blood, pus, stool, urine, all those things are still there.
Hare Krishna. Okay.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Prabhuji, I have two questions. One is, you told that Bharat Maharaj was least bothered about whether Krishna protects or not protects. He was totally absorbed in the Krishna consciousness. And you said, unless and until you are on the bhav stage, you cannot realize that stage of Krishna consciousness relation. And you explain five rasas also. So, as a neophyte, how, because in Saranagati definition, it is said, avashya rakshi bhemam, Krishna will always protect his devotee. So as a neophyte stage, how we can relate that Bharat Maharaj was least bothered about whether Krishna is protected or not protected. He will be absorbed in Krishna consciousness. But for us, like we are not in that bhav stage or we have not realized our rasas. So in that stage, if we realize that Krishna will always protect us. So that is what you can say. Is it also the definition of like Bharat Maharaj was in the bhav stage, but we are not in bhav stage.
Right.
So how I can realize in that stage that Krishna will know?
Well, Krishna's, we can realize that, well, Krishna will always protect us, but he's also given us some ability to be part of that process of being protected.
So he's also, that's also his mercy, that he's given us some ability to, you know, protect ourselves. But Jadbar wasn't interested in that, that's all. That's the difference, because he was on a, you know, he was on an above platform, like you said. Okay?
And when Raghunath Das Goswami surrendered to Lord Chaitanya, so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sent him to the Swarup Damodar.
Sent him what?
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu handed over to Raghunath Goswami to the Swarup Damodar Goswami.
Uh-huh.
That you be under him.
Uh-huh.
So Swarup Damodar maybe is a Lalita or Vishakha. I am not much confirmed. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came here to give us highest rasas. And Prabhupada write in Bhagavad Gita introduction that the congenial relation is the highest one. So what you said as a bhav stage, how we can attain if we are in the, we have realized our position. So is in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's this mission, are we all are like Rupanugas, we are all Rupanugas. So are we all are Manjaris or Gopis, or we have our different forms? As a, some is coward boys or some is friends, or in this particular movement, those who are followers Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they are all gopis or manjari.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give four rasas. Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya and Madhurja. Okay, but he has different, but branches, there's different branches of his tree. And in particular branches of his tree, particular specific rasas may be prominent. And that can be seen from the fruits of those branches. Okay? Thank you. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.